You are back recording.
You know, it's not nearly as fun to take a break when it's all virtual. You can't go into another room and eat stuff.
Right. Don't you have a kitchen?
Yeah, but I'm nervous. I'm going to go, as soon as I go in there, they're going to ask me something. And then I'm not going to, you know. So, okay, so we're on case number 18-39, Joshua Bitten, physical therapist.
Mr. Bitten, are you present?
I am.
Is there anybody else present for this complaint?
I do have legal counsel present as well.
Okay.
And if legal counsel could identify themselves, please.
Yes, this is Jason Wells.
Jason Wells. Ms. Richardson, you can proceed.
Okay, thank you. Complaint number 1839 was opened and based on a complaint received from a physical therapist assistant. It's alleged that Mr. Bitten was absent during therapy sessions. He relied on untrained techs to, quote, babysit, end quote, the patients he was being paid to treat. And he was billing for three patients during the same treatment time, as well as being deficient in his documentation. This case is for your review.
I'm sorry, if I could interrupt one more time. If counsel could spell his last name, I would appreciate it.
W-E-L-L-S.
Thank you very much.
All right, so this is an initial review, right? And trying to decide whether or not to move forward or with anything. So we usually don't have people present for initial reviews, but is it appropriate for them to make a statement if they wish?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. He can. Okay. As far as, if you're asking counsel, I apologize.
Yeah, go ahead then.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the men and women of the board for allowing me to talk with you about this. I addressed a lot of the concerns that I had initially in my response to the initial complaint. When I received a copy of the investigation report, I was kind of taken back by some of the claims of some of the former colleagues that I did have. Concerning some of them saying that they had reached out to myself personally to talk about any questions or concerns. And then many of them had said that they reached out to administration and the owner of the clinic concerning any concerns that they had had. The only time I recall ever sitting down with anybody was involved in the PT department, the owner of the clinic, or the manager of the clinic was in the summer of 2012. And that was validated by the owner when I had asked if she had remembered a meeting where everyone sat down and just answered questions or concerns that anyone had, whether it was regarding supervision or whatnot. And it was all resolved at that time. I did reach out on June 24th to the owner of the clinic and the office manager and head of operations to ask them if anybody had previously, since that time, reached out to them about any questions or concerns, to which they all commented in the negative that nobody had reached out to them. Things were brought to light a little bit more to me when I read one of the comments from one of my PTAs that I supervised in the past, that he said typically these people would go and talk about things during lunchtime when I was not present. And so I have had many of the people, including Dr. Caldwell and Mr. Linares, in their interviews also commented how I was always with patients, working with patients, utilizing technicians and assistive personnel in constant communication with them. Mr. Linares even went into further detail on his and my working relationship, how we always kept an open line of communication with one another to ensure the proper care of the patients and that we were progressing on. I also want to thank Richardson for her honesty during the interviews that I had with her. She actually with many pointers that I could implement into my documentation. And I actually took her suggestions to heart and wanted to continue to progress in that area. So I did take a continuing education course over medical documentation so that way I could continue to my skill set and improve my abilities in our craft. So, you know, I feel like I utilize assistive personnel to add an appropriate and by the book basis. The complainant even commented that I do things by the book, and within our profession, I feel that it is an essential portion to help protect one, the practitioner and their licenses, those who work under the practitioner, but also the patient we work on and work with, so that way we can ensure that they get the very best care we can provide as practitioners. So I'd like to, I thank you guys for allowing me to provide you with an initial statement, and I'm willing to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, thank you. Just remind the the board members that this is an initial review, and so if you have questions, it'll help you decide whether or not where to move this case. That's appropriate, but okay, not to be exhaustive.
Right.
So, Mr. Bitten, this is Peggy Hunter.
Yes.
How many technicians do you have working with you at any given time?
There are days where I will have one technician, other days where I will have two technicians. I will never exceed the legal bound that we have set of either two technicians and one PTA or two PTAs and one technician. So there will be days where the clinic might have multiple technicians there, but never at any one given time will I exceed that supervision.
Okay. When you have these technicians and you hire them, do you have on paper in charts competency tests that you've run on these technicians?
I will do more of a probationary state with them to where I can get to know them more and their abilities and work with them. And as I do so, I will have a minimum of 2 to 3 months to where I work directly with them before I let them even work with any patient. So that way they can understand what is expected, the requirements that are necessary, and they do not outstep those bounds. As far as having them do any type of written test or anything like that, I do not have a setup like that.
I didn't mean written tests. I meant, for instance, if you're working with them in treating, because you have a very, very, what's the word I'm trying to think of, very vulnerable population. And right. You document and watching them treat the patients as you've taught them.
Yes, I do watch and document the treatments of those patients. As far as within documentation, I will typically use the term assistive person with that as well.
Okay. Can you identify why you have three
of this vulnerable population, working with three patients for 45, 50 minutes, where others are having one patient and they're working with them 45, 50 minutes?
I think it's a personal preference between the practitioners. I do know that there have been other PTs that utilize assistive personnel and technicians as well, that see multiple patients. It really comes down to what that PT feels comfortable with.
Okay, well, I've never worked with pediatrics, so I know we have members of the board that do, so I will let them ask you some more appropriate questions. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, it's Kelly King. I do have a few questions for you, please. So describing your and reading through your statements, were there times when you had the techs or the aides working with patients by themselves without your oversight while you were working with a different patient?
No, all my technicians will always have my oversight. I might be, so it's a very large clinic facility. And so if I'm working with a patient and, for example, if I'm having them ride a bike and in the larger area of the clinic, my eyesight might be off for a brief moment, but I will come back and continue to observe them and consult with them throughout the treatment sessions to make sure that everything is okay with those patients that they are working with.
Just for my clarification then, so if you are working with a patient and you have two other patients that you're responsible for and the other two are working with a tech and you only have your eyes off of them for a moment, what's happening with the patient that you were working directly with at that time?
I am continuing to do treatment with those patients. I feel like I can multitask on a lot of different levels, and I always have my head on a swivel. So my number one priority is all those patients that are under my care. So I'm constantly watching each patient, seeing what they're doing, providing verbal input and feedback to any assistive personnel working under me of what we need to do or how we need to adjust treatments. As far as any specialized treatments, those are directed specifically under my care. And
what would be a specialized treatment? Give me an example.
If I needed to do stretching on a patient that had a knee flexion contracture, I will go in there and do that specifically. And then I would maybe utilize technicians to have that patient go up and down some stairs so that way we can try to get some more muscle activation within those specific muscles, including the hamstrings, quads, glutes.
Can I just ask you quickly, when you said if they need stretching because of a knee flexion contraction, you would go in there, but yet you just described that you're in a large gym and you can see everyone. So what do you mean by go in there? Were there private rooms these therapies were happening in, or were you not in the space? What did you mean by that?
No, there are multiple different rooms and areas. As far as with how the clinic is set up, usually those areas have openings to where we can monitor from different settings. So for example, if you have a larger area and there's a treadmill room, there's still a direct line of sight on those. And then you can even look into the main gym area where we do have two flights of stairs where you can still get main sight.
And then I just have one final question. Were the families, parents, caregivers aware that over half of the therapy time they were in the clinic was not with a licensed PT or certified PTA?
Quite frequently, there would actually be parents and caretakers physically there.
Were they aware that the person that was working with them was a tech with no formal training?
Yeah, they were aware that they worked directly with me and that I was still over their care. And yes, they did know the technique as well. And so quite even Dr. Wong in her statement commented that many of the families and I had a good relationship and they had respect for me. And I really tried to keep that open line of communication with these parents and the families.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I just have a clarification question. In the investigative report, it states that on date 10/8/18, between the hours of 2:45 and 6 o'clock p.m., you were performing patient care duties and supervising three technicians. And so, that colleagues, confirmed that at times Mr. Bitten was supervising three technicians who were performing patient care duties as well as supervising a PTA.
So at no time did I supervise three technicians at one time. If any of those people who, because I did read those claims from, I think it was two individuals, neither of them came up and talked with me. As they had said also, the technicians were also independent contractors with the clinic. And so the complainant commented that he would want to utilize technicians, but they wouldn't go help him. That wasn't on any doing or request from me. From my observation, sometimes some of these technicians didn't want to help other therapists, whether it was within the discipline of physical therapy or in other disciplines, probably because of a lack of cohesion with their personalities. And so if those individuals who made those claims would have come and talked with me, I would have willingly sat down and let them know that I do not use three technicians at one time, but I will use two technicians at one time. That third technician, their job was to go clean, to help organize the clinic, to keep a sanitized area, do other tasks that they may have been required to with helping front desk people or whatever it may have been.
It also states in the investigative report that you allowed a PTA to perform the components of the quarterly report's reevaluation with the patient.
I would have them work with, so this is specifically I would imagine with Mr. Linares. So some of the patients were very familiar with Mr. Linares and would provide greater performance for him. I would be able to observe that performance and talk with Mr. Linares on some of the things that we could work with on that patient. Like I said, we kept a very good working relationship and an open line of communication. I wrote all the information in documentation, but there were some times where I would go and consult with Mr. Linares on some of the areas that he may notice a little bit more than I on where those patients were lacking. And so I would ask him for his suggestions on some goals that we may need to address.
But you realize a PTA is not supposed to do reevaluations. That is the PT's scope of practice.
They do not do the reevaluation. They may be sitting there. If I needed a patient to walk on a balance beam, I am physically right there observing, and that PTA might be holding on to that patient's hand, but I am still physically there observing the performance.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, any other questions? Okay, do I have a motion?
I have some questions, sorry.
Oh, sorry, okay, go ahead.
Mr. Bitten, can you tell me which classes you have taken in continuing education in the area of pediatrics?
Yes, it was either, I think it was the end of 2019, to where I did take a course with Cranial Technologies, going more over brachiocephaly, plagiocephaly, differential diagnostics, how we can, or when it is necessary to refer to a specialist for those areas. I also took another continuing education course a few months ago concerning functional strength training in patients and pediatric patients with genetic disorders and cognitive disorders. Let's see, what else?
But those two were both after this complaint was filed. You've worked in this setting for 10 years, specifically at Head to Toe for 10 years. So I'm wondering what classes you had specific to pediatrics.
Pediatrics, the Cranial Technologies, I've done that a few times prior to these complaints, or well, prior to any further investigation or action taken within the complaint, because I received that in, I received notification of the complaint in November of 2018. Prior to that, I have attended continuing medical courses that are put on by pediatricians over various different diagnoses, such as with fractures, further care of certain specific fractures within the bone, so that way we can make sure that the growth plates are not going to be compromised and we cause any further issues. I've also been a part of pediatric sports training and continuing education courses. I've attended Phoenix Children's Hospital seminars, to where they have addressed everything from sports-related pediatrics to nutrition, to care of various different injuries with them as well. I, in the past, I've done courses over NDT, PNF. I do believe I did one over torticollis. I'm just trying to go through my memory of all the different ones that I have done that are specific for pediatrics.
Right. So I'm hearing a lot of sports-related education. How many of the DDD clientele had sports injuries or issues, would you estimate?
We get some, maybe about 10%, but in with just so even from Phoenix Children's Hospital, they weren't always just sports related. I also do sports therapy as well, and yes, I will get some of those patients, but as I commented, I also did courses with Cranial Technologies in the past, not just recently, but they do have an annual conference or seminar to where they invite people who work in pediatrics, so that way they can share the newest research and what they're doing to combat what they specialize in. And so I feel I'm constantly trying to learn the newest things out there. I will utilize some of the sports activities that I learn about with a lot of the patients in DDD, because many of these patients do want to participate in the Special Olympics. And so I also gear different interventions to be able to incorporate some of the sports that they want to participate in, but make sure that it's going in and addressing the goals that we have set up. So
I noticed you're a CSES and a dry needling special. You have a certification in dry needling?
Yes.
How much of that would you use on your DDD population, would you estimate?
None of them. I would not use any dry needling on any DDD patients. One, I do not want to cause them further trauma. And there are other ways that you can go in and address myofascial trigger points and all that. With a certified strength and conditioning specialist, one big question that I've researched a lot is the benefit of strength training and at what age, whether it's through doing calisthenics or any type of resistance training. That has, from my experience, bridged also in with some of these patients that I treat. One that comes to mind, his brother loves to work out. His brother is also a caretaker of this patient. The patient goes in and works out at the gym with his brother, and we work together on what exercises we can do to incorporate strengthening of his core, his glutes, and get that proximal stability that we've been working toward.
And how is that specific to his impairments or functional limitations?
With the patient, he is currently unable to jump. He will display leaping pattern because he doesn't have the proximal stability to control both legs moving in that specific motion. And he also has some neuromotor issues with that. He also has weakness within his glutes. And so when he tries to jump, he will have increased hip flexion and trunk flexion. So that way he can try to put those glutes on a stretch to be able to activate them. Mm-hmm. And so
list for me three pediatric specific tests that you use in your initial evaluations.
Tests? Sometimes I'll use the GMFM. Sometimes I will use the Peabody scale. And then there will be times where I will use a 6-minute walk test as well.
And can you tell me a little bit more about the GMFM?
Yeah. And so in a recent course that I took, we have found that it is very beneficial for specifically cerebral palsy patients. Another thing that I want to implement, but I haven't been able to afford a dynamometer, is being able to use that specific objective test on patients who are cognitively aware enough to utilize it from 5 and up, which new research has suggested that they're capable, and that is a valid and reliable test to perform on those patients.
You've actually performed the GMFM
on here and there. And the reason is I do not have, in the past when I initially started, you had to go by the test. And so the clinic has been working on trying to get more of these tests. So that way we can try to put a digital copy into an EMR that they're trying to create right now.
See. Okay. So does your clinic have the GMFM?
I will look it up online and try to do it when I can. And then I also try to take in consideration when I am treating a patient, if they have that cognitive awareness with that as well, to be able to do that.
So your clinic does not have the GMFM?
I'm an independent contractor. And so, yeah, head-to-toe therapy, to my knowledge, does not have the physical copy of the GMFM.
Which GMFM are you using?
Probably the one from, probably can't give you the very specific name. It was probably around 2015. So the one that was used during that time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. I was asking which GMFM were you using?
Which, yeah. And so it would have been the one that would have been valid during 2015. So, so the gross motor and functional motor test.
So I'll just for members of the board, there are two GMFMs, and they're not generally available online to use. They are a purchased product. And so, Mr. Bitten, I'm asking you, which of the two, which one did you utilize?
I found something online to be able to utilize. And that's all I can tell you. I don't know what version it is, because as you said, you know that all these things you have to physically go out and purchase. I do not necessarily make sufficient money to where I can say, hey, I'm going to justify going in and buying this test, because I know some of them have been quite expensive. And so...
Here's my sense, sir. I get the sense you are a highly skilled, competent physical therapist in sports medicine, professional athletes, extreme athletes, and military personnel and special forces, as you've indicated in your phone interview. I don't get the sense you have any knowledge in pediatrics. I don't think you have any competency or marginal competency at best in pediatrics. I base this on your responses today, as well as some of the objective measures you did with strength training, specifically strength training someone with muscular dystrophy against a resistance on an incline and on a treadmill. And so this is really alarming to me, particularly since you've been in this practice setting for nearly 10 years. I also don't find the use of skilled personnel, be it two or three, remotely reflective of typical pediatrics practice, and I find that concerning as well. And so because of that, I would be in favor of moving this forward.
This is Kelly King. I could not agree more with Anushka's concerns and thoughts on this, Mr. Britton. You know, when you were sharing with us, you know, the several multiple times you've been to a cranial technologies course, when the majority of your patients are age 5 and 6 up to teenage, cranial shaping doesn't occur really much after 18 months. So I'm having a really hard time connecting those DEUs to anything that you would be able to apply to your patient population. So for your responses and the investigative report, I would absolutely move forward with a motion.
I would. So I would support a formal hearing. I find this to be just a gross misuse of personnel, a complete lack of competency, poor documentation, and substandard care.
I would second your motion.
I'm alarmed also that it's a vulnerable population who are not native English speakers in most of the instances in a lower socioeconomic class.
I did use people to translate for. Usually they are office staff who are quite fluent in Spanish. I agree with you in the sense that, yes, I would not use cranial shaping for anybody beyond It's 18 months. That is no longer a viable source. I do very respectfully disagree with you in the sense of my competency. What I would say is it's probably more of the lack of ability to express what I'd like to say with it. So I have three children of my own. I do know, and I've even used cranial technologies for my own child. I did gain a great deal of information from them. Yes, I do utilize sports-related activities, but I also do very well understand the difference in trying to use stuff that would be for somebody who is physically capable and a patient who is just trying to learn how to activate their glutes or their quads or even be able to stabilize on one leg. Soccer will allow a kid to sit there and try to stand on one leg to help improve their gait pattern. Being able to ride a trike to strengthen the glutes, to be able to go up and down stairs without having a greater risk of falling.
And I appreciate that. I would imagine your children are typically developing, and the population that you are working with in DDD are not. In fact, they are uniquely atypically developing in most cases. And
I understand. And I also do have nieces and nephews that do have those same issues and same problems.
This is Peggy Hunter. I agree with Dr. King and Nushka. I want to say that I've never worked with pediatrics, but I find that Ms. Richardson's investigative report was very thorough and very good job. And I think we should, I'm going to make the motion to forward this to a formal hearing.
Hunter, you're still in the discussion phase with the complainant. You would have to allow Mr. Bitten a closing statement.
All right, thank you.
Engaging in a motion.
All right, thank you.
Are there any other questions, Mr. Bitten, by the board members? Okay, Mr. Bitten, would you like to make a closing statement?
Yes. I know I was not able to put what I know, especially about pediatrics, into eloquent words. I do know that I have taken courses to be able to help treat them, and not just recently. I've done this for several years, trying to better my skill set and being able to help these patients. I have been humbled through this whole experience. This has been very difficult for my whole family and I for the last, well, it's been 19 months since this whole thing has started. I do know that I am constantly learning and progressing in every aspect. And that's one thing that I strive to be, is humble, honorable, and constantly progressing and try to be a person of integrity. I just want this experience to all be over for my family and I, so that way we can just go back and just try to live our lives without having the stress and anxiety that this whole experience has caused. I'm sorry that the complainant felt the way he did. I was surprised when he even commented that he didn't have evidence to support any of his claims. But after Miss Richardson interviewed me and shared with me some of the areas of deficiency that I could improve in, that's where I tried to be proactive in learning and adding to my knowledge and abilities. So I thank you for your time, and thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to make a motion then?
Yes, I'd like to make the motion to move this to a formal hearing and also to include the additional rules or violations that the investigative report lists.
And that was
ARS 32-204420 and R424304, R424303, A2 and C1, and ARS 32-204422.
All right. You want to include the principles, number 7.1?
I do.
All right. Did we get everything that you wanted in there?
Yes, sir.
I'm second. Dr. King, second.
All right. Discussion on the motion. All right. Does everybody understand what they'd be voting on?
Yes, sir.
I'm still in discussion mode. This is Nushka Remick. I'm just curious if there was any thought to or Karen or Mindy, if you can again direct me to where in the investigative report it talks about billing.
Mm-hmm.
Which page?
In this scenario, the contractor, Mr. Bitten, indicated that all visits were billed under therapeutic activities.
Correct.
And it was per visit. It was not billed under CPT code. So I did not receive any records related to billing.
Right, because they're...
There's no time indication per record, as you noticed in the medical records. There's no indication really, other than the patient arrived at a certain time and left at a certain time. There's nothing to indicate what treatment was pursued for what length of time, and even who performed the activity, whether it was a tech or if it was Dr. Bitten. So I don't know that we would have any of those records, even if we subpoenaed them. I don't know that those records would exist because that's not the way they were billing. I suppose, and I don't know, Dr. Donahue, maybe you can help with your experience. We could see what the practice billed, but Ms. Dr. Bitten indicated all he would do was bill the per visit rate to the practice, and the practice took care of the billing to DDD.
Right. I guess that's what I'm interested in seeing, because to me, this borders on fraud.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll work with Dr. Donahue, and maybe she can help me craft the subpoena that would get the records that would reflect what you need.
So in order for us to continue to investigate, we would have to fail the motion to move to a formal hearing in order to obtain additional evidence in this case and return it to you as an initial review.
Dr. Donahue, is it possible? Oh, sorry, Mona. Go ahead, Mona.
Yes. Hi, this is Mona Baskin. I apologize for the interruption, but I would agree with Dr. Donahue at this time. Should the board want all that conclusive information and to add that as a separate part of your consideration before you move it forward to a formal hearing, then one of the options the board could do is continue the investigation, direct Dr. Donahue to subpoena additional billing records that would be presented to the board at a subsequent hearing, and those additional findings and information could be considered by the board and possibly integrated into any further motions moving forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Mona. Dr. Donahue, just a quick question. Would it be a possibility to continue moving forward with the motion, but then potentially open a complaint against the practice or the owners of Head to Toe in allowing multiple kids scheduled that are DDD that are clearly outside of rules and regs?
The owner of the practice is a speech language pathologist.
Thanks.
And we cannot open a complaint against an entity.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, in lieu of this, I withdraw my motion.
No, you're going to have to vote on it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The second. And then if it fails, you have at your opportunity a new motion.
All right, thank you.
Peggy, it's Kelly, since we're still discussing. I'm not sure that additional billing records would potentially change the outcome of the formal hearing.
Probably not, but I find this case very disturbing, and it needs to continue for sure.
Deb, I think the point is, though, that we can either move forward with a formal hearing without the additional complaint, or do you think the potential for something being there with the billing is such that we should not ignore it?
Well, I don't think, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that we can't do anything about the billing because it's going through the clinic itself.
Right. So, from what I understand, he doesn't bill DDD directly. He just sends an invoice to the clinic. So I don't, it would be very easy for that not to be an issue.
Correct.
So my understanding of DDD billing is it's on a per visit basis, not on a timed basis. However, Mr. Benton is required to be responsible for the billing that's produced, whether he's a contractor or not, because it is his patient. Okay. So what you would probably receive back from head to toe is just a listing of the dates of service to which they submitted that the patient was seen based upon the information that Mr. Benton provided. Now, that could add to evidence in your case, or you can decide that evidence is not necessary.
I'm not sure I could call this physical therapy.
No.
Mm-mm. I don't think the billing records would add that much more to the body of evidence that we're looking at right now.
No, because it's just going to be a calendar of dates served and the number, you know, and an hour for each one. It won't be greater. The documentation we have is much, I think, more indicative of the lack of care versus the billing.
From an evidentiary standpoint, the billing would confirm that the patients were billed DDD for services provided by Mr. Benton.
And a tech or a tech, right?
Well, yes, but you can't bill under a tech. So the billing is going to indicate Mr. Benton as the provider.
And this is Mona Baskin, and taking a look at your factual allegations and the legal allegations that are contained in the investigative report, additional information may be helpful in establishing your violations, particularly on page 4 regarding the ethics and the adequacy of the patient records. And let me see what other ones. The providing treatment interventions unwarranted. So it very well could provide additional factual information.
Mona, as a point of order, if I wanted to go into an executive session, would we have to vote on the previous motion?
Yes, we would. That would probably be best at this point. Or, you know, right now we have a motion on the table.
Right, Mona,
you could always,
because the executive session may provide members of the board information that would have affected the vote that's on the table.
That's true. Yeah. So the board could go into executive session at this point in the middle of a motion, in the middle when we have a motion on the table.
Okay. So.
So let's vote to go into executive session. Are you ready?
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
And that would be, I'm sorry, Dr. Donahue. I apologize. It's hard on the phone. It would be for obtaining legal advice and discussion of confidential records. Thank you.
Okay, now we have to remember how to do this.
You just hit the phone button.
Okay, so let me first of all, we're going to vote to go into executive session. And then if that is in the affirmative, I'll give you some instructions again on how to do that. Okay. So for the motion to go into executive session, Mr. Greer.
Yeah.
Who did the second?
I did.
Mr. Greer did.
Dr. King.
Who was the primary? Nushka. Okay, got it. Mr. Greer is a yes. Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Wall?
Yes.
Ms. Hunter?
Yes.
Okay, so you're in the June board meeting tab. You need to go down to the bottom and click the red phone and to disengage from this meeting. Go into the executive session meeting and join that meeting. Everybody clear?
Mm-hmm. And not non-board members will just remain where they are.
Correct. If the non-board members hear us, you need to call me, please. Okay. All right. Yes. I'm going to leave this meeting and go to the executive session meeting.
And Dr. Donahue, I'm going to go ahead and call in and disconnect.
Looking for Mr. Clinton. Mr. Clinton, are you still in this meeting?